Today's episode is titled Possession is Real. It was a fun one to write, and the name will make sense as we get more into the episode. If you ask most people about ghosts, you'll hear the safe answer: ghosts aren't real. Scientists, specifically physicists, often mention our perception of reality isn't as true as reality is. To put that into layman's terms, what that means is what we think we understand about the way we interact with the world and the way the world works are two different things. Only when you look at things on a microscopic level do you begin to understand how things actually operate. Let's take, for example, a table. When we see a table, we see a block of physical matter designed to keep things off the floor. For our application, whether we're entirely accurate in our perspective, it isn't too important. But the reality is, the table is made up of more atoms than you could possibly imagine. We don't see atoms, we see a table. To perceive the world for what it is, with all the inner workings and complexities that make up our daily life, it would overload even the smartest of minds. Over time, we as humans have learned to soften our intake of information so we could ensure that we could exist without thinking of every intricate detail of every action we have taken, every action we're going to take, or are currently taking. This model works well enough for the day-to-day. The problem arises when we try to think in the abstract. When in the discussion of ethereal topics, like ghosts and possession, we immediately dismiss the idea because we know ghosts aren't real. Even with the knowledge that our reality is not as we perceive, it's assumed ghosts are not one of the hidden miracles of the universe. I will, however, make an argument for possession. Possession can be described as something owned, occupied, or controlled, like property. Dominion by something, such as an evil spirit, a passion, or an idea. A psychological state in which an individual's normal personality is replaced by another. It was 1969, in an empty field in Bethel, New York. A man with shaggy black hair and an untrimmed beard by the name of Joe Cocker was about to get on stage and change music forever. With a song titled A Little Help from My Friends, a cover of a famous Beatles song recorded 2 years prior from the 1967 album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Joe would go on stage, and with a voice that sounded like he gargled razor blades, he would give the performance of a lifetime, turning a hippie anthem into a soulful blues rendition that would change the world of music forever. When Joe first stepped on stage, he didn't have much of a plan. Unlike most musicians at the time, Joe Cocker didn't actually play instruments. When the music started, he began to move erratically, swinging his arms, jerking his body like he was overcome by another entity. Joe Cocker was possessed. He was possessed by the music, enthralled in the art. There was an article written in 2003 in The Guardian by Michael Hann, where he interviewed Joe Cocker and specifically brought up this performance. He asked Joe Cocker, "Where did your unique dancing come from?" And Joe Cocker replied, "You mean my arm movements? I actually saw myself with Eric Clapton. You know, you see all your old stuff on YouTube now, and I was horrified at myself, with my arms just flailing around. I guess that came with my frustration at never having played piano or guitar. If you see me nowadays, I'm not quite so animated, but it's just a way of trying to get the feeling out. I get excited and it all comes through my body." The part that I found most fascinating was "I get excited and it all comes through my body." This is the possession that I'm talking about. Possession of the art. When an artist is in the zone, or the flow state, as Stephen Pressfield describes it, the author of The War of Art, the person is no longer present, and instead a force, often referred to as the muse, has taken over. Now, the muse is taken from the Greek mythology, and is said to be one of Zeus's daughters, who would possess a mortal and overtake them with creativity. The muse is what we feel when we're on autopilot, crafting our best work. Artists describe this feeling as the reason for some of their biggest hits. But the feeling is not limited to art alone. Athletes such as Kobe Bryant, CEOs such as Elon Musk and Bill Gates claim their best work is done under the guidance of the muse. Anyone is capable of being possessed by the muse, but to do so, one must submit to its demands. The muse doesn't ask for much, but of what it asks for, there is no negotiation. If you wish to summon the muse, unlike most satanic rituals which require candles and some Aramaic, it's rather simple. You must show up every day without exception. You must dedicate serious effort to the craft, and you must be painfully obsessed. Just to emphasize what I mean, when I say you must show up every day without exception, Stephen King often talks about the muse, and he says that when he writes and when the muse comes, it comes because you allow it to come in. It doesn't tolerate people who half-ass something. If you show up every day, at some point it will come knocking and it will guide you to wherever you need to go. But only by showing up every day and showing that you're serious will it come. And this sounds so ethereal, and you could say it's just the psychological motivation, or it's just repetition, skill gained through repetition, and whatever, however you want to look at it, whether it's you want to look at the rah-rah way of muse, looking at it as some kind of ethereal force that possesses you, or you just want to look at it as getting better at something because you try every day. The truth is, it only happens when you're doing something in routine. If you show up whenever you feel like it, the muse doesn't take over. Often, I find, from my experience, the muse often happens after you're already in it, forcing yourself to do something, and you're doing it for long enough, suddenly something just clicks, and it just starts flowing itself. But that only happens by forcing yourself to sit down when you feel you don't want to do it or you can't do it, before that moment clicks. Usually after writing for 15, 20 minutes, all of a sudden something just clicks, and I go in a completely different direction, and it just feels right. And then you go for as long as you can go, and as soon as you stop and you look back at it, it almost feels like you yourself weren't capable of writing that yourself. And that's what people mean by the muse. It unlocks a part of your brain that you normally don't have access to, that you only have access to by showing up, taking it seriously, really putting in the effort, and treating it like an actual profession. Until you do that, you're going through the motions, but it's not the same level of work. And scientists, you could look into the science of this. There's something that happens when you dedicate serious time to a craft that you start making connections you wouldn't otherwise make. And it's just how our brains operate. Something about routine allows us to think differently than when we do it whenever we feel like it. And the proof is in the pudding. All the successful people that do whatever you want to do, treat it like a job. And a lot of people that are really good at what they do make it seem casual, and that's because they're so good at it that they can make it appear that way. But that only happens by showing up every day, taking it seriously, dedicating serious effort to your craft, sitting down when you don't feel like doing it and doing it anyways, because like Seth Godin says, a plumber doesn't say, "I don't feel inspired to fix pipes today." He shows up because he's a professional. And a writer or an artist does the same thing. Being obsessed, as Stephen King says, all writers are readers, not all readers are writers. That means that even when you're not writing, you should be reading, because if you're obsessed about what you do, that should involve reading and writing and absorbing everything related to storytelling. Because only then can you really start thinking like a storyteller. A basketball player is always thinking about basketball. When Wayne Gretzky is not playing hockey, he's watching, rewatching games to learn more about the game that he plays professionally. Because only through that obsession are you able to unlock potential that most people don't have, because they don't have the perseverance or dedication to take something like this seriously. These three themes, showing up every day, dedicating serious effort, being obsessed, are the one common thread throughout all of history that people that are the best at what they do all share. All these successful people are unrelenting in their ability to show up even when they don't feel like it. And anybody is capable of this greatness. But you have to have the patience. One day you may feel possessed by the muse, if you're so fortunate. I hope you'll not squander it, as many have, now lost forever to time. I would like to thank you for listening. I hope if you enjoyed it, you'll share it with your friends or rate it. Rating it would be awesome, because more people can discover it that way. We've been slowly growing every episode, especially since this has been pretty consistent. Next week will be a post, and then the following week will be a podcast. And that podcast, I'm hoping to do something a little bit different. So stay tuned. In the next 2 weeks, there'll be hopefully something special coming out. I want to thank you guys so much for listening, and until next time, Lauren Bronstein out.